Hello and welcome to Be in the Know, the ESSEC Knowledge Podcast. Our guest today is Dr. Ashok Sem, a management professor at ESSEC. He's going to talk to us about strategies and responses for business survival during a crisis, with a focus on the luxury industry. Thanks for being with us, Ashok.
Thank you.
So I'll just jump right into it. And so as we know, the COVID-19 crisis has been catastrophic for the economy. Most companies have seen their profits take a hit as activity grinds to a halt and millions of people lose their jobs. So you're an expert on the luxury sector. Can you tell us a bit about how the crisis has impacted the industry and how consumer behavior has changed in response?
So thank you. What I'll do is to answer this question, I'll go back a little bit in historical perspective, and then I will take an evolutionary perspective to understand this crisis. So what happens usually, a moot point in the field of luxury business is whether or not to follow it as a business cycle. Those who are for the motion will argue that the luxury industry is today a global business. So if it is a global business, luxury goods, that means that will travel across the globe, where goods and services are made and distributed primarily from France and Italy. So the consumers, as you ask the question of consumers, are global, and that is why any natural calamity or disaster, or for example, COVID-19, would have a direct implication on the business. Those who are against the motion will argue that the luxury business is not like any other business. It is dependent on enhanced disposable income. If the world of today, wealthy consumers with growing disposable income know how to protect their wealth, leading economists studying rising income inequality to posit that the rich will get richer while the poor will get poorer in most nations of today. These high net worth individuals would hence suggest that they will continue to consume, and thus luxury business will constantly deliver regardless of the crisis. So what we have done for the data is we have plotted the GDP growth in the United States from the last 70 years. So this is 1950 to 2019. And this is part of our book, The Road to Luxury, where the first chapter deals with the response to any crisis, because we wrote the book between the time of 2008 to 2013, where there were two crises. And when we wrote the book, we saw that actually the first point which people debate on is actually is in place, where during a crisis, spending habits actually differ than spending habits in a normal time. So people get more, try to find security and try to find ways and means to spend, but they do not actually splurge on luxury business at that point. They wait for something to normalcy to come back. So following this above argument, the most important driver of luxury brands is to succeed is thus dependent on the disposable income of the clientele. So the disposable income is still there, but they actually don't spend, because the macroeconomic forces, the industry forces, the market forces, and the trends, they are not able to forecast. And this is where I think this COVID-19 is very, very different from the rest of the crisis.
Okay, yeah, it's very interesting. Can you go into maybe a bit more detail about how exactly previous crises have impacted luxury, and what a bit more also about what makes this time different from those?
Again, thank you. This is again what we did research on over a period of, let's say, 15 years. So mm-hmm. What we found that the disposable income of high net worth individuals has increased substantially during the preceding 10 years till 2019. It was a boom period for the luxury business. And this is being shown in the CAC 40, the CAC 40 of the French stock market index, where in the top 10 companies, four of them are luxury companies. As mid to high income society has become relevantly more affluent, consumers with disposable income have created, through their strategic decisions of brand building, they have created the desire to, and hence the demand to shop products which are termed in the luxury and fashion business which is creates dreams for people. So when you talk about what has happened before and how we can predict to the this crisis, which is the health crisis, which is unheard of before, what we find is, in for example, in 2001, world watched as the terrorist attacks in New York and Washington took place, followed by the war in Afghanistan in 2001 and the invasion of Iraq in 2003. The early 2000s also saw a recession in many countries of the world, aggravated by the outbreak of SARS in Asia in 2003. In 2004, the tsunami in Asia killed hundreds and thousands of people. In 2007, the subprime mortgage crisis that began in the United States housing market spread all over the world and caused, among many other things, the collapse of the Lehman Brothers and the European debt crisis of 2011, which continued to have effects such as the Cyprus bailout and political turmoil in Russia and Italy. And during 2009 to 2013, this industry felt the impact of the crisis. The lesson from this crisis deeply affected the luxury industry, because what we have seen, when we plot the graph, again, we see that though there has been a type of blip, you know, in the graph, there is also a revival very quickly. So the revival is very quick in terms of luxury industry, and this is what makes it different from other industries. What happens is, both in the four time span, that is 1995, 2001, 2002, 2003, 2008, and 2013, the luxury industry, though, has a hockey stick like approach, but every time there was a blip. So it fell down and then it again survived. It fell down and again it survived, which is going by the discussion that we had in the first part, that the moot point is the spenders, the ones who have disposable income, comes back to spend just after the crisis. So this has been in the historical perspective. And in this perspective, because of this pandemic in 2020, the situation has repeated itself with the outbreak of coronavirus, what we say as COVID-19. So what has happened actually is, we see that in the year 2020, this is the prediction with many companies and many industry leaders, that there will be a blip. And this blip, the amount of blip is in question. And with my research and with my studies, what we have seen is, we can have a benchmark figure of around 35%. So the revenue of the luxury industry, personal luxury goods industry in total, is around 320 billion euros. And out of that, if you take out 35%, which means that the revenue, total revenue of the luxury personal goods industry, would be close to around 200 billion euros this year. So there will be an effect in this.
Okay, interesting. And I also wonder, since now we're online more than ever, does the fact that we can't go to boutiques still have as much of a negative impact as it did previously? Or does e-retail offset some of the losses from in-person sales?
So it's a very pertinent question, you know. So what we try to define in the rational consumption sphere is, we have the macroeconomic forces, we have the industry forces, we have the market forces, as I've alluded to before, but also the key trends. So what has happened in the last 10 years or so, people who were more or less involved in the e-commerce business, they were saying that luxury business should be also available within the website, within e-commerce platforms. But luxury business are never they are not very LAs. They are not very okay with the e-commerce situation, because luxury is something which you go, which you feel, which you expose to yourself, which you give to yourself as a gift, which you go for an experience, which is a passion for you. On the internet, people were not sure how to bridge this gap from online to offline to this experiential part, which is the consumer experience part. So since the macroeconomic forces have changed and we are all confined to our homes, this has become something of a very important parameter that if I am at home and I cannot go out, how should I indulge in something which makes me happy? And this is where the platforms have come up. And we have seen from the last three, four months of research that those who were ready with e-commerce platforms, they did exceptionally well rather than those who were not there before. So in the industry forces, we now have e-commerce platforms taking a big leap, which means that companies like YEE and App, Yux Netaporte of Richemont Group, Farfetch, MatchesFashion.com, 24 serves of LVMH, they renamed it 24S, Seku and JD.com from China, Tmall of Alibaba. So these have suddenly come up in the discussion, and this is one of the key trends. So the technology push, the regulatory push, the cultural and the social cultural barriers of the debunked in terms of this confinement has created this type of positive force for the e-business.
Okay, interesting. So speaking of the internet, how can companies harness the power of the internet to weather the storm and survive the crisis?
So going back what I said just now, the issue is twofold, whether you want to have a D2C, which is direct to consumer, or you want to be on a platform. So the platform area is getting more focus because they have already invested huge amounts of resources at the back end. That is why we always hear that will Amazon become the $2 trillion company, you know? Mm-hmm. So already it is in question because how far in it grows. Amazon is now, I think, $200 billion, wow, more or less. So it can go to $1 trillion or maybe $2 trillion, because if everyone shops on the internet, then that is the next leap. So the platform-based approach versus the individual approach. For example, individual means you go to a website of a shop and then you order something, and the shop has a backend where they take the order and then have a mechanism to send the material to you. And this is a big part of the e-business, because just placing an order is 10% maybe. But to give you the output, that means the same thing that you've ordered at the same price, at the same process, at the same discourse, is something which you have to do again and again. You cannot make it right once and fail the next time. 100% you have to make it right. Then only people will get back to you, because there are now chats, there are now feedback forms, there are now where you can put your comments. So it is very quickly goes out that you are not a serious player. So this is where the D2C model, which we say the direct to consumers model, is not working as well as people thought. But the model which is on the platform, the ones that I've talked about, they have created this model exactly like Amazon.com. But Amazon is not in the luxury business. They want to be, but they are not yet. So this is the debate of how you want to be in a platform, but still create your independence, because for luxury, the main thing is exclusivity. So you think of yourself that you are buying, let's say, a Gucci loafer from Amazon.com. So you don't find something very clear, very interesting experience on Amazon.com. Of course, you can buy, but why not? But Gucci won't want its loafers to be on Amazon. Otherwise, the whole belief of luxury business is dead, because you have to be exclusive. You have to be rare. Nothing is rare on Amazon.com. Similarly, if we talk about Yux Netaporte, if we talk about Farfetch, if we talk about 24S, they also have to create this exclusivity within themselves. So if you get X in one platform, you cannot get that X in the Y platform. But if you get X in X, Y, A, B, C, D, E platform, then it is not more anymore exclusive. So then better to have your own internet channel. If you want to have your own e-commerce channel, the whole backend comes into the play. So I believe that now there will be a business opportunity for individual players to streamline the supply chain of individual companies. You understand what I'm saying? So
yeah.
I want to do it X, but I don't have the backend. So I'm going to outsource the backend to someone who can give Julia, every time she buys, everything she wants, at the same experience. And if she doesn't like, she will send it back, exactly like Amazon model, but in a very, very sophisticated way. So I think this is the e-commerce thing that we are heading into.
Okay, I see. And so also now that restrictions are starting to lift in many places, we're starting to be able to shop in person and to travel again. So what can businesses do and what should they do to draw their customers back?
So this is a broad question. So what we have done is, I think I can answer the broad question in a more structured way if I go back to some models, which we will discuss new business models afterwards. So one is the problem solution fit, which means that I have a problem. The problem is gone. So what is the solution now? So as people come back, I have to be again ready for people to come back to my shops. So I have to start the supply chain process 1 month, 2 months before, so that everything what the customer wants is already available, which is not by magic, but which needs the planning, retro planning. But since everything was closed, I didn't do much. So I have to find a solution to what I should do. The second is the product market fit. Which means that you can buy a bag, you can buy a watch in Paris, you can buy that bag, watch in Switzerland, you can buy that bag, same bag and watch in Italy. But can you buy that in China or India? At this present point of time in China, maybe yes, but India, no, because India is still locked down. Can you buy it in the US? No, because US is still locked down. So this is called the product market fit. And the last discussion is the business model fit. So when people will come back, they will try to find new things, you know, but you haven't produced new things in the last 3-4 months. So what would you do in this case is a question that companies need to think about. I think this is a very important parameter, that what would company think about the business model fit. And when we see this, we have already seen that companies have, we have predicted in our book, The Road to Luxury, that companies clearly demarcate two types of markets because of the product market fit. One is a mature market and one are emerging markets. That was the essential part that we did for the last 10 years. But now companies are doing something is COVID-free market and COVID with COVID market. So this is again completely different because, for example, the top five countries which we see is didn't reach the peak yet, they have a different strategy for those. Whereas those markets which have already reached the peak, which is more or less now normal, as you said, that things are getting normal, which is the mature market, the strategy is different. So we have to separate that. And what we have seen is one important thing that everyone, for example, Gucci, Louis Vuitton, Dior, Chanel, they have all increased prices. You may ask, why is this so? Because why should increase prices at this point of time? Because after this pandemic, people didn't work, people work from home, people have less money to spend maybe. So why? So this is where the Veblen effect comes into picture in the luxury industry. So the more you increase prices, the more the demand, because it is about aspiration. Mm-hmm. So if I want something, and if you want something, for example, let's say you want a Ferragamo shoe, a Ferragamo loafer, for example. So it doesn't depend if it is 20% more or 10% less, because you want it and because you crave for it, because you love it, because you have been dreaming for it, because you desire for it, you are ready to pay. And since you couldn't pay and couldn't buy for the last 3-4 months, you are anyways going to pay. So this is what the general price increase is about. So over and above board, everyone has increased prices. This is how you want to trigger the consumer.
So in addition to increasing prices, what are some other strategies that businesses can employ to survive the crisis? And do you think that the crisis might even have a silver lining for companies' image and even profits? For example, I'm thinking of how LVMH produced hand sanitizer, which surely helped the public view them more positively.
Okay, so this is what, again, luckily, this is what we did research on for the last 10 days, because when we saw that there are these blips, we tried to follow what companies usually do. So what companies usually did before, and now they're doing the same thing, is there are two processes that goes parallel. One is internal and one is external to the company. So the survival response or the recovery response of companies for the internal part is cost cutting. So everyone above board will cut costs. The second, cost cutting means many different things, you know, for example, closing off shops, for example, laying off people, for example, reducing exposure to, of selling time. So I have to reduce my cost because I am not earning as much as I was supposedly to earn the same way last year on the same date. Mm-hmm. Next is quality enhancement. So I would like to have quality products, and it could be any products which is more or less follows the PESTEL objective. PESTEL means political, social, economical, legal, and environmental. So as you said, LVMH, so most luxury companies have gone into, those who have the resources have gone into trying to provide help for the pandemic crisis, which is a very good social way of being with the people, those who are your consumers first. And the second is they had the resources because, as I said before, earlier I referred to that they have huge amount of disposable income. The companies also have disposable income because luxury industry is one of the most profitable industries in the world. And they have been having these profits for the last 7-8 years in a constant growth mode. So this is the second. The third is you can diversify. For example, you see LVMH has diversified into hospitality industry. Last week, they bought something in the US, hotel again. After that, after they bought something as a hotel chain in Belmont 2 years before, they bought also Tiffany last year. So if you have resources, this is the best time to employ your resources, because then you get not only at bargain prices, but also you enter a market or you enter a product category or you enter a new business at a much less cost. Next is we have talked about downsizing, where we're laying off people at this point of time. It is not for permanent. Think of this, it is not permanent. As soon as the industry will bounce, they will be again called for the services. But at this present point of time, they may have to do it because you can't open the stores. So if you can't open the stores, what will you do with these people? So you have to either relocate or you have to reconfigure the way people work. But since it's a global business, for example, if you have people in Russia, you can't just tell them to go to the US because both Russia and US market is closed now. So what should you do in this case is a question that they need to understand and need to focus on. And of course, financial restructuring, which means trying to save. And as you saw in the news, or most of the retailers are going into bankruptcy. So Neiman Marcus, for example, J. Crew, for example, JCPenney, for example, the large retailers, they are trying to adjust themselves in terms of how to survive with the infrastructure expenses that they have. For the external part, you have expansion. You can expand, for example, Rimowa just expanded to a new category, which is extension of the brand, which is sunglasses. So before it was only bags, travel bags, then it was small bags, and now sunglasses for travel. Then we have repositioning. We can see that, okay, this is not working, so we can do this. For example, for the next 2 years, people would be scared to buy high-end luxury jewelry if you are not investing, if you are not for investment for yourself. Because you don't know if you want to spend 100,000, 200,000, 500,000 euros on a luxury jewelry, At this point of time, maybe you will do it in January to 2021, but at this point of time, you are not sure. So this is why repositioning of the market. And we have seen recently that Bulgaria has openly acknowledged that it will take 2 years for them to come back to the original position which they had in 2019. So they give them a two-year time frame for this type of consumers to come back. And the other is those who are very safe, those who have completely diversified portfolio. For example, the diversified conglomerates like LVMH, like Richemont, like Kering Group, they can do actually nothing. They can just sit and wait and see what is happening in the world of today. And they can try to reduce a little bit here and there and wait for the new normal to arrive. So in conclusion with this, because this is a most important part of our podcast today. So in conclusion, we have already seen raising prices. We have already seen closing stores. We have already seen legal action with landlords. We have seen collaboration between brands. We have seen new product lines, as we have talked about Rimowa. We have seen with Rimowa and also with Tag Heuer. We have also a big debate on fashion shows, for example. Mm-hmm. So in December, would there be physical fashion shows or online streaming fashion shows? Would it be, so Gucci said, we do not want to go into 4 fashion shows. We would like to go do only 2 fashion shows per year. But a Chanel and Louis Vuitton and the rest, they say, no, we want the fashion shows to be like this. So now there's a debate whether how the fashion shows will look. So if there is a second wave, there will be no fashion shows for sure. But no one knows exactly what will happen. So everyone is thinking that, okay, we put our don't put our eggs in all basket. We try to diversify and we see what happens. The main winner in all this discussion is the sustainability and the circular economy, because there is a huge increase now in not only secondhand goods, but also reselling, which means that people who have some products who want to resell it. They haven't used it maybe, but it's like mint condition for them. Some they have used it, let's say, rarely, and they want to sell it now so that they can get benefit of what they have bought before. So this is also the some strategic responses for the supply side recovery.
Okay, so that brings me to my last couple of questions. So how do you think that the crisis will change the luxury industry? And what do you see as the future of luxury after the crisis?
Okay, so here I can conclude by saying or summarize by saying that there are some predictions and there are some actions. Mm-hmm. So the predictions are, as we see, that this is an unprecedented global crisis. Second, this crisis is no doubt larger than all previous crises, more in the range of 30 to 35% loss in 2020, more like a gap year. Third is whether the rebound, whether the survival, whether the recovery will be V-shaped, U-shaped, or Nike swoosh-shaped. Before, everywhere we saw V-shaped, because mm-hmm. in China, we have already seen that as China had opened up, there was a V-shaped recovery. But we are not sure for the rest of the world it would be U-shaped or Nike swoosh-shaped. More in the lines, my prediction is more in the lines of Nike swoosh-shaped, which means that it will take some time to recover and then go up. It will not be like I have dropped 35% and next month I go back to my normal. So it won't be like that, because people are trying to come to terms with this type of pandemic crisis, which was unprecedented at a global level. Mm-hmm. The next point is there is a new variable here. Before, it was financial, or it was before some health at some points. It was some political terrorist. But this time, it is about health and emotions. It is worldwide health and emotions. So I think what we say in management, the cash, it is a different cash, not the liquidity. It is cash is knowledge, mm-hmm. attitude, skills, and habits. Knowledge, attitude, skills, and habits will be changing and will shift dramatically. So the knowledge of people is much more now because they were reading many things and they were understanding many things during the confinement. The attitude to life has changed. People are trying to think differently. For example, those who have gained weight will try to lose weight. Those who have lost weight will say that I want to stay like this, so I have to change my wardrobe, for example. The habits will change. For example, now we are used to work from home. Before, we never worked from home in this period of time, in this span of time. So I don't need, for example, you and I don't need to buy a dress or a shirt just now, because we haven't worn a dress and a shirt which we used to use for the office or for external meetings for the last 4 months. So this is why the habits have changed, and also skill set. People have, I see my students and I see my friends, they have done a lot of online courses and they have increased their skill set. So this is what the predictions are. Of course, there are three more things: sense of insecurity and anxiety, which is also was not there before, because if something happened in China, in France, I am interested, but I'm not so much affected. If something happened in the US, I am in Italy, I am not so much affected. If something happened in Japan, tsunami, I am interested. I feel for Japan. I know that this is something happened, but in my home in France, what can I do? So this is why there was something which was different. But this time, it is worldwide insecurity and anxiety, which is not regional. And recovery, I predict, like some people who were saying what to do, how to do. And in the luxury industry, it is more of a two-year recovery than a recovery which is a V-shaped. Some pockets will have a V-shape, but I think overall, the luxury industry will have a two-year recovery period, which is normal in these circumstances because it's a global pandemic. And the last one is a question, which is, we use it in the terms of computer science. It's called FIFO, LIFO, and FILO. What is FIFO? First in, first out. It is the case of China. They were first in the pandemic, they were first out. So market will behave in a different way. Last in, first out, which is, let's say, UK and the US. It was supposedly last in, first out, for example, Sweden, but it didn't happen like this. So it is called first in, last out. So it is more of a FILO, which is you were there, you didn't understand what is happening. So you had different routes for your people. And now it has turned out differently. For example, in the case of US, in the case of UK, and in the case of Brazil, and in the case of India, it is still 1.5 months late. So what we experience in continental Europe is unthinkable now in Brazil, in the US, in UK, and in India, for example. So this is the predictions that is happening. So the actions, as you were asking me, what are the actions? The actions are renew and engage in relationships. This is what will matter in the long term. Use data mining to establish personal connections with all stakeholders, including family members, customers, employees, and suppliers. So this is what we can achieve in this time frame. We can create our models. Identify and keep the interest of the loyal consumers, because those who will come back will remain loyal. So we have to give them something extra, something different, because they remain loyal in this pandemic. Harness and engage with the power of e-commerce by moving products and preferences. For example, as I said, you have to decide. Now people have to decide. We also have to decide how do we shop. For example, I can go to Paris to shop, or I can shop from home. But if I shop from home, am I sure that what I'm shopping is the right thing? For example, there is a company called Real Real. So it was selling, it was reselling products, and there were lawsuits against Real Real that though they were selling the products that they thought was real, that is the company's name is Real Real, but actually it was not real. So now I have to think the power of e-commerce in different ways. Customize attention to all loyal clients with reward for loyalty. So this is what I said before. Encourage participation and interaction on social media over handheld devices. Now, even we don't use the computer, we are always on the phone. So we are checking, we are trying to understand what is happening. We are reading the news. On the same time, we are seeing the YouTube. For the same time, we are streaming. For the same time, we are taking appointment. So the phone is becoming much, much more important than other handheld devices. And the last part is wait, watch, and keep in touch. I think this is what I think is we have to wait, we have to watch, and we have to keep in touch.
Okay, thank you very much for joining us today to talk about how businesses can weather the crisis and perhaps come out even stronger. And if you're interested in more on the topic, please check out ESSEC Knowledge, where we regularly share the research and expert insights of ESSEC professors. Until next time.